everyone. I'm Artemis.
And I'm Rajni. And we are
STEM Women in Kidlit.
I'm an entomology technician and the author of Do Jellyfish Like Peanut Butter? Amazing Sea Creature Facts and The Grumpy Pirate.
I'm a doctor and the author of the middle grade books Red, White, and Whole and Much Ado About Baseball and the picture books Bracelets for Vina's Brothers and The Secret Code Inside You, all about your DNA.
Hi, everyone. Today on STEM Women in Kidlit, we're here talking with Songju Ma Demeke. Songju worked as a software engineer, and then she went on to write books such as To You's Discovery, Finding a Cure for Malaria, and Cao Chong Weighs an Elephant. Hi, Songju.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for having me. It's so great to be here.
Songju, thanks for joining us. We're so excited to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. And love to chat with you, STEM women.
Yeah, go STEM women.
So we'd love to hear a little bit about your software engineer background and how you got into that to start with.
Oh, okay. I grew up in China and came to the United States in 1996. To advance my education. And after receiving my master's degree in computer science from DePaul University, and I started to work for Motorola as a software engineer. I did a lot of computer programming and work and served as a technical support for the database system of Motorola supply chain in Illinois, and I carry a pager, you know, for on-call system support 24/7. If in the middle of the night my pager went off, I was expected to log in the Motorola system and start to work in less than 15 minutes. So that was a challenging job, but also exciting. Yeah.
So it was almost like being a doctor with a pager, except that instead of a hospital, you were working for Motorola. Is that what you said? Yes.
Yes, I think yes.
Just so interesting.
We have that rotating and on call 24/7. So So it's a kind of a challenging job, demanding too sometimes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean. Even as a doctor, you weren't on call 24/7 forever. So that's impressive.
So you are on call, right? As a doctor?
Yeah. I've been, when you're a resident, you're on call a lot more frequently than you are when you're out of residency. So in training, there's a lot more being on call and wearing that pager. I still have a pager. I think I'm like, doctors are like in the last category of people who still use pagers.
Yes, we use a pager. And we get a double battery to make sure we can hear. So when you have this side, you have another one. Okay, yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so that's my work as a software engineer. Then after my twin daughters were born, I became a stay-at-home mom. You know, maybe you guys can understand that, you know, makes sense, like because of with like two daycares, all that stuff. So my husband and me decided that I will just became a stay-at-home mom. And then I read to my daughters every day, right? Like every month. And I read all those great books, rekindled of my love of literature and the dream of to be an author one day. You know, actually my first book was a result of one of my writing assignment from a free English class at a local community college. And the positive response I received for this assignment encouraged me to write more and pursue my interest in creative writing. Because my Chinese heritage and my IT background, so naturally my book aim to share science and logical concept along with the Chinese culture with young readers. So that's how I started.
That's cool. Beautiful. I have to ask, since you said one of your first writing times writing children's literature was in an English class, do you do a lot of your writing in English, or do you write it in Chinese and then translate it over? I didn't even ask what dialect of Chinese do you speak?
Oh, Mandarin.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So actually, at first, I didn't work that way. Because at the beginning, I thought in Chinese. I cannot translate to English. So after time goes, now I better. I more think in English now. So,
interesting. That's so interesting. So you started writing that first assignment was back when your children were very young. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. How is the road to becoming a published author? Do you think it was long or short or something in between?
Oh, I think it's really, it was long. It was long. I think my first draft, that story is started 2012. I started 2012. And I first book came out in 2016. So it's not too long.
That's not long.
Oh, yeah.
That's actually not very long.
Oh, not very long. Oh, okay.
It just feels long. Okay. But I feel like in publishing terms, that's really not long at all. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I just was so thrilled. You know, when I was little, I dreamed to be an author. But then I don't think I ever be after I came here. Because I think you publish, you use your second language really beyond my wildest dream, even possible. Because even my English, I really feel not very comfortable when I know I still make a lot of mistakes. So when I write, I can think carefully. And I know I would forget articles because we don't have articles in Chinese. So I would forget and some all these thes and us. And sometimes I forget I put the place you don't need to, and I forget the place you should have. And also the word we don't change, we same. And here you have past tense, all that stuff. So I have to go through many versions. So today I will focus all these verbs, you know, like that.
That's incredible. I mean, I actually think that that's even more remarkable to have books published in a language that is not your first language. I can't even comprehend that actually. So that's impressive, really impressive.
Oh, I feel very blessed. I feel very blessed. Like, even possible, I just say this beyond my dream. So
then I have to ask, I see that Cao Chang Weighs an Elephant, there's a Chinese edition. So how is the Chinese edition compared to how, because you said you kind of were thinking in Chinese and translating into English as you were writing that story. Uh-huh. How is the Chinese translation of your English words that were kind of translated in your head from Chinese? Is it similar to that? Or were there more like liberties taken with it compared to how you thought it would be?
Yeah, it's in this book, Chao Chong with the Elephant, is I first wrote in English, and then I translated to Chinese. But I also, I think because I knew this story in Chinese, you know, this book is in an ancient Chinese book, just one paragraph. It's a true story. So I know this idea, and I just use my imagination, either the characters, the settings, the dialogue, all that stuff. And when I translate, I think I either some of my Chinese language, you know, if you just pure from the words to words, you won't translate that way. But because of my Chinese background, so I know what is the better way to say it, or the setting or and the story or dialogue, all that. So
you got to translate your own story.
Oh,
I
yes.
didn't know if they'd, that would make more sense. I was thinking like, oh, maybe they'd hired a translator to translate it. But of course,
not this one.
Of course, my book that's in French, I don't know any French. So of course they hired a translator to do that. But I love how you're talking about how you would say it different. You're not doing a direct translation. You're doing mm-hmm. how it sounds fun. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of my book, Are Pirates Polite, is a rhyming book and they translated it into French and it rhymes in the French. I mean,
oh, wow.
I can't make it rhyme in the French, but somebody who spoke French read it to me once and it rhymed.
Oh,
and
wow.
I think it's like fascinating how people can do that at all. So,
yeah. So actually, Songju, I wanted to tell you, so my latest picture book, The Secret Code Inside You, the one that's about DNA,
uh-huh.
it's a rhyming picture book and it's yeah. going to be translated into Chinese.
Oh, wow.
How is that possible? I don't even know what they're going to do. I'm like, so I'll have to show it to you whenever it comes out.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
like fascinated by this. I don't even know what to say.
Oh, wow. I
have see if it still book. Rhymes or not.
Yeah, I mean,
I have to read that book.
Yeah, I'm like, huh. But I mean, it's so cool, right? And I
yeah.
love that we once, I don't know, I was at some event as a kid and you remember, you know that song, It's a Small World from Disney?
Yes, yes.
Somehow we ended up singing it in French.
Ooh.
And it rhymed also the same way that the English rhymed. What in the world? How is that possible? It's amazing to me.
It is. It's a pure amazing. That's
yeah.
incredible. Yeah.
Okay, now that we've gone down that rabbit hole of yeah. rhyming things.
Are you always swamped by other authors being like, hey, can you read the Chinese edition of my book for me?
Yeah, that will be so cool.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So once you started writing books for kids, do you have like critique partners? Do you run things by your children? How does your process work?
Oh, I do have a critique partner. I have one critique partner from our 12 group too. And I have a local one too. That's where I started. And I do run with my kids, my husband, my family, everyone. And if my daughter, they say, oh, it's boring, oh, they say like that. I said, okay, then I will take that out. So yeah, critique partner, they are the best. Actually, this story, at the beginning, I even have this, the elephant ate peanuts. Someone feed a peanut to the elephant. Then one of my critiquer lady, she's a scientist, she told me that time in China, there wasn't a peanut in China yet. And I was like, oh, really? I didn't know that. So I just did the research. Oh, I said, oh, right. So I took that out. I just say a nut instead of peanuts. You know, see, that's incredible.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. So when was this story set?
Oh, this is 2000 years ago in China.
So okay.
She told me that time, no peanut in China. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So interesting.
Yeah, it is. So critique partner, they are so wonderful.
It's also a good example of the amount of research that has to go into a picture book, even one that doesn't have a huge word count or something. People mm-hmm. often don't realize just how much background work you need to do, even if it's something that's fiction. It still
yes.
requires research because
yes.
you want it to be accurate within the fiction as well. So
yes, definitely.
Right. And what was it like? What was the illustration process like for that book?
Oh, that book is my publisher chose Christina Walt is an American. artist there, and she's great. She live in Ohio. We never meet each other, and she said that she did so much research. So she found a movie, Chinese movie, that's about that period of time. And she said that she watched that movie about like 100 times and to see what they dress, how they did their hair, all the clothes, all that stuff, you know. And she's amazing, and I love her work, and I just think it's just beautiful. She did incredible work, like you see this, the beginning of the page, the curious little boy in the pond, and with the building have that Chinese look of the architect. It's just, yeah, I love her art. She's incredible. I feel very lucky to have her illustrate my book, yeah.
That's great that all the architecture and everything is even accurate within for the time period in the book.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Another place that I think people forget about the research that has to go into some of these.
Yes. We did a few times back forward, the one place like the jade, I say the one place, the and otherwise the research hold a jade. And he said, oh, I will bet a jade, this elephant, and weight 7,000 yen or something. And at the beginning, she drew a jade. It's kind of like a big piece of jade. I said, no, it's not like that. It's a jade, it's like a curved, beautiful piece of jade is will hang on your belt. So I gave her a few examples, and then she changed, you know. It's, yeah, so.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting because those are the kinds of kind of cultural details that, you know, why would anybody know? Like, you know, anyone who's not from there, why would they know? And so it's fascinating to kind of go back and forth. I've had to do some things like that for some of my picture books too. It's very interesting.
Yes, it's great. Yes.
You're listening to STEM Women in Kid Lit, hosted by Artemis Rarig and Rajini Laraca. We're here today talking with software engineer and Kid Lit author Songju Ma Demeke.
So are you planning to write any books that involve software engineering?
I think about that, but I haven't write one yet. Yes, I do think I should write something about that.
Does any of your training in that field, do you think any of your training in that field plays at all into how you do your research for your books or how you plan out your books?
Not directly, but I think that's all contributed for what you do. And for example, when my first book came out, one of my husband's friend's wife, she wanted a publisher. Then she asked, oh, how you find a publisher? Because she wrote something, she tried to find a publisher, I haven't found it. She said, how you found it? And so I did my research. You know, there is one sentence, is a upper and sentence, one sentence say, if you forget all your concrete knowledge, like your math or physics, what left is that education. I don't know, you guys get that or not. Is say, what we get trained is by how you do things, that method, that thinking. So I say that I wasn't trained, you know, I wasn't really a writer, but we all trained to find a way to solve a problem, to get things done, right?
Yes. So you're saying that there is a parallel between software, computer programming, and writing. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
That there are similarities, even though they seem very
different. You do the coding, just you know, you debug, just like we revise, right? Okay, this now smooth. How that where I just feel this a little bit clunky. I have to read that many times how to smooth that up, just like my bug, this debug process. Yes.
Nice. So are you talking about, so my husband writes, his background is in software as well. And he talks about elegant code. Like when you make the code exactly what it needs to be with like the fewest whatever commands or whatever it is to do what it needs to do. Is that what you're kind of talking about?
Yes. All the coding, all math, the simplest and the beautifulest, and they are elegant and the precise, you know, it's just the human nature. Oh, everything in order, and it's just a beautiful, elegant. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that, and of course, that's what we're trying to do in picture books, right? We're not trying to write 5,000 words. We're trying to write a few hundred words and convey a story and all this information. And how cool is that?
Yes, it is. It's amazing. It's everything in a picture book, the good picture book, it's a flow eloquently too. It's almost like a poetry, like a piece of music, you know. It's just beautiful.
So were there any classes you took as a child or any childhood experiences that helped lead you into software engineering? Or was it when you were older that you decided to go in that direction?
Oh, actually, this is a long story. Actually, when I was little, I grew up in a little town in China. There wasn't a library at all. And that time was a Chinese cultural revolution time. So it was a culture desert. It's like all the Western and the traditional Chinese culture and the literature and the were considered nowhere to and forbidden. And we had no TV, we had a radio and occasionally Russian movies. And we had 8 baking opera, and that's all we had. So we are the people read a Mao Little Red Book. Do you guys ever heard that Little Red Book? No. Mm.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, that's all people read in school and the working place. And the people, the workers in factory and the farmers in village, they will vote who will go to college. Is that no exam? The people will vote who will go to college. So it's I really start the art on the culture and literature, and I love read, and so I will read anything I can get my hands on. I read a textbook, a mouse book, or even instruction books, and I think reading was my escape. I really love reading, and I really admire the power and the beauty of a good story. And really dream one day I grew up can write a story like that. So it's a thing, right? Really, I didn't really have something big to me, software engineer, but it's like this. I love story. Oh yeah, it's this. After 1970, then Mao died, and the Chinese, the politics and the economy, everything changed so dramatically. So the exam system was restored. So you can take an exam to go to college rather than rely on other people vote for you. So that time, and Chinese people suddenly realized how much the gap between the Western and the Chinese and the economy. So then we feel the science is so important. And we have a slogan, it was like this. It's like, if you can master science, math, physics, and the chemistry, you can conquer the world. So I think, oh, okay, so I feel I should have my to build my modern China. So even I love stories, but I always good at math, you know, and physics. Mm-hmm. And so I choose to be a scientist or engineer to help my country. So actually, before I came to United States, I was a PhD student in Paris, the Institute of Physics, Geophysics of Paris, in France. It's a long story. So
did you have to learn French too then?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, so whoa! Oh my goodness.
That's 1996, after 2 years into my PhD study, and my funding wasn't renewed due to the French Academy. So I made a snap decision to come to United States to finish my PhD, to my study. But once I got here, 1996 was called the computer and the internet, that wave. But I changed my major to computer science. So instead of my geophysics. So that's a long story. And very few people know this because I think it's too complicated. So I just don't mention.
Wait a minute. You started off as a geophysicist? And then yes. You changed. Oh my goodness.
Then I changed France. To computer science. Yes. When I came here, I didn't have a computer undergraduate degree. So I changed to master degree. So I have to took a class. At the beginning, I remember that this page, first one page, I have like 20 words. I didn't know what that mean. So I had to look from dictionary. And that's a challenge. But I was a straight A student.
Of course you were. Is there anything you can't do? That's incredible.
I
would like you to write a geophysics picture book as well.
Oh wow, that's great. Yes, please. Because there's so much to do with the earth, the planet, and earth science is a good field. Yes.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay, now I feel completely inadequate. You learned two different languages, you were a geophysicist, and then you changed to just get, a degree in computer science when you didn't understand a lot of words in the language. That's so impressive.
Thank you.
And then you went on to become a children's book writer. So
yes.
You go. When you were reading to your daughters, was it a very different experience than when you were a kid? Because you said you didn't even have a library in your town. So the books that you were reading to them.
Yes, all the book I read to them, they were first time I read this book to myself because I never have opportunity to read them before. So I kind of relive my childhood with my child, my daughter. So, Dr. Seuss, all that, One Fish, Two Fish, all that's classic. Yes, I love those. And I went to all the museum, all this experience. And I feel, it's kind of relive a childhood. Yes, the dream is nice. It's totally different with when I was a child. We have had a really simple life. We didn't have air conditioner. We had to go to the well to get the water. We burned the coals to cook the food. We didn't have gas. We had a really simple life. Not like here, the kids are so privileged that you have anything you need or want. Yeah.
So did your parents tell you a lot of stories then?
Yes, not as much, but they do. My parents, they told my stories, and my grandparents. Actually, this my first book and my second book, both from a story I was told when I was a little girl, when is my grandpa told me. Of course, my parents told me stories too, but these two stories just happened to be told by my grandparents. And this Chao Chung with Elephant actually is a so popular story in China. I think it's like a 90 at least 95, if not 99% all Chinese people, they know this story in certain level. It may be just an idea. We have a Chinese phrase just about children with an elephant. And we have stamps. We have a lot of statues in China. So that's a famous Chinese child apology. So we all know.
So interesting. Now, is that story typically, you know, like spoken, like a story you tell children, or is it written down somewhere, or did you kind of take a story that you had heard and then kind of expand upon it?
Yes, I heard. Actually, here, when I, after my book published, I went to my daughter, they went to Chinese school in the weekend. And because they don't, they need a teacher. So they asked me to teach Chinese. I said, oh yeah, I will have to. So actually when I taught Chinese in the Chinese school in the weekend, I found that they have that story, a short story, a paragraph in the book. I found
That's so much fun. So they, your daughters knew the story too.
They didn't learn it until I told them this story. Yes.
Interesting. Interesting. Oh, so much fun.
But it's great that you're now making all these folk tales and stories that you grew up with accessible to so many more people too.
Yeah, it is. It's great. Yes. I think the Chinese culture, we have like so many years, like thousands of years writing culture. Oh, this, like a talking with elephant, I think this story is in a book. It's over 1,000 years old. That's just incredible. So I will love to share our southern wisdom with an American young reader because I'm so proud of it.
Oh, it's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. I love how stories can connect us, not only across cultures, but across time, right? Mm-hmm. You think about somebody 1,000 years ago hearing this story, and now it is a book that is available for, you know, for modern children. It's so incredible.
It is. It is.
So Songju, do you have any STEM book recommendations for us?
Yes, I do. I will recommend that we have a lot of good STEM books, and I particularly love this a few. They are by diverse writer. One is Queen of Physics.
Yes, Teresa Robinson. She's wonderful.
Yes, so I love this book. And one is,
This is Gravity?
Yes, it's by Jason Chen. Mm. He's great. And this is really a simple, elegant book for young readers. Oh, and also I love this book.
That's Seven Golden Rings by me and illustrated by Archana Srinivasan.
Yes, I love this, the character, the wisdom and the culture aspect with go with it. It's just a beautiful book.
Thank you, Songju. Wow.
Oh, yeah, I love that book. Yeah, also like this book, it's The Whole Wheel by Karen Yin. It's about make room for other. It's kind of have a stand factor in it too.
Wow. That book looks delightful.
Yes. That's it.
Love it.
Yeah. And I love your program. I think all our stand women, because our background and our interest, all our work in certain level related to STEM. And that's, you know, I think that's, we really need that kind of book because we really need children, you know, have the, to be creative and face the challenge. You know, right now this world is so many greater challenges in this world right now, like COVID-19, you know, global warmings, you know. I think the kids be creative, right? Really important.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, those of us with STEM backgrounds, a lot of us feel like math and science really are inherent to the world around us, right? So I think that it's, even if we don't write books with a specific STEM intention, I think that a lot of that love for math and science kind of comes through in our books.
Yes, yes, like, yes. And I, this book, I love this book too. It's so fun. It's so fun.
Yeah. She's holding up my book, Does a Fiddler Crab Fiddle?
Yay! So,
there you go.
Well, does it, Artemis?
You have to read the book and find out.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us today and sharing all your fun background that got you into writing.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This was so much fun, Songju. This was a delight to talk to you. And I can't wait to see what's out, what's coming out for you next.
Oh, thank you.
To find out more about Songju and her books, you can visit her website at songjumademaki.com. There's a link to that in the podcast notes and on our Facebook page, STEM Women in Kidlit. And now it's time for STEM book recommendations.
My STEM book recommendation is Ada Twist Scientist, written by Andrea Beatty, illustrated by David Roberts. I absolutely love this picture book that is about a little girl named Ada who is a scientist. She loves to think scientifically, and this book celebrates the importance of asking the question, why?
My STEM book recommendation is Amazing Evolution, The Journey of Life, written by Anna Claiborne and illustrated by Wesley Robbins. And while we're on the topic of evolution, I also wanted to recommend the book When Plants Took Over the Planet, The Amazing Story of Plant Evolution, written by Chris Thorogood and illustrated by Amy Grimes. Both of these books are beautifully illustrated and really break down evolution into terms and diagrams that kids can relate to and understand, but also have really, really in-depth facts and information in them. Thank you for listening to STEM Women in Kidlit, the podcast about women with degrees or jobs in STEM fields. That's science, technology, engineering, and math, who also happen to write or illustrate children's books. Happy reading!